Welcome to the weekly sermon podcast of Valley Grove Baptist Church. We are thankful you stopped by to hear from God's Word, to grow closer to Him, and to be inspired to reach your area of influence.
All right, good morning, everybody. If you've got your Bibles this morning, let's find John chapter 15. John chapter 15. We're going to take a look at the first half of John 15 and what is likely one of the more famous stories or famous talks from Jesus in the Gospel of John, where Jesus is going to talk about the vine and the branches. And so we'll read through verse 17 this morning, or we'll look at the passage through verse 17, and then we'll pick up the last half next week. All right, so today, if you'll remember, jog your memory. If you want to look, it's not going to be on the screen. But if you want to look at the very last sentence of John 14, Jesus says, "Rise, let us go from here." So the disciples are traveling from the upper room where they've been since chapter 13, where Jesus washed the disciples' feet. To today. And so today they're traveling from the upper room to the Garden of Gethsemane. And many scholars think that along the way between the upper room and the garden is where this story happens in John 15. In fact, one professor said that it probably happened as they were either near the temple because of the vineyard motifs that were on the exterior of the temple, or as they were walking from the city of Jerusalem down the Kidron Valley to get across the valley to get up to the Mount of Olives, because in ancient times there were grapes planted along that slope. But regardless of where, today we're going to talk a lot about grapes and vines and vineyards and all of that. And it's interesting that Jesus chooses to use this, because archaeologists and historians tell us that grapes, wine, and vines and vineyards are one of the most prevalent ideas either in art or literature in the ancient world, which is kind of fascinating. Like that cultures inside the Bible, as we'll see today, and outside the Bible, all use the vine and vineyard either in art or in literature, right? Hey, let me ask you a quick question for the Bible trivia. What was one of the first things Noah planted after the flood? Grapes. For the next time, you know, you're in Bible trivia game, you can thank me later, right? Noah planted a vineyard. That was one of the first things that Noah did when the dry ground came. They planted a vineyard, right? And so vines and vineyards and all of that are inside the Old Testament. Psalm 80 is a great example of how the Old Testament uses this vineyard imagery in relation and in the context of Israel. So today what we're going to do is we're going to read verses 1 through 8 to begin with, and then we'll read verses 9 through 17. Because verses 1 through 8 are kind of the metaphor or the story, and 9 through 17 is the explanation. So we'll read through verses 1 through 8. We'll come back to verse 1 and we'll walk our way through it. All right, here we go. I am the vine, or I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser. That's the farmer for grapes, okay? Not a word we use a whole lot. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away. And every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes, that it may bear more fruit. Verse 3. Already you are clean because of the word that I have spoken to you. Abide in me, and I in you, as the branch cannot bear fruit by itself, unless it abides in the vine. Neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. Whoever abides in me, and I in him, he it is that bears much fruit, for apart from me, you can do nothing. Verse 6. If anyone does not abide in me, he is thrown away, like a branch and withers. And the branches are gathered, thrown into the fire, and burned. If you abide in me and my words abide in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be done for you. By this my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit and so prove to be his disciples. All right, so let's go back to the beginning. In this passage, there are four characters, all right? And they all are related to vines and vineyards and all of that. So here are the four. I'm going to give you the four characters, and then there's four ideas that Jesus talks about that are related to the four characters, okay? The first one is the vine dresser. Again, that's the gardener of the vineyard, or the farmer of the grapes. He's called a vine dresser. The vine dresser is the caretaker of the vineyard, and that person is God the Father. Jesus says, I am the vine, and my Father is the vine dresser. So God the Father is the steward, the caretaker, and the person who looks after all that deals with the vine. Now, Jesus clearly says in verse 1, I am the vine. This is the last example of an I am statement from Jesus. Okay? So we've had a bunch. This is the last one. And he says, I am. Now notice what he says. I am the what? True vine. Now again, he is using the word true there to oppose all that have come before him. What have we seen? What have we seen in John's gospel up to this point? Jesus is the fulfillment of the temple. So there's no more need for a temple because Jesus fulfills all that the temple does. There's no more need for all the festivals because all the festivals point to who? To Jesus. And so here again, Jesus is saying, listen to me. Jesus is saying he is the locus and the center for all of God. You've got to catch this. For all of God's work from this point forward in the world. Right now, we're going to come back to that idea in a little bit, but hang on to it. Jesus is the center, the focus, the tip of the spear, however you want to cliche it, of God's work in the world. Okay? So Jesus is the vine, the Father is the caretaker of the vineyard. Then he talks about branches. He talks about two types of branches. He talks about fruit-bearing branches and non-fruit-bearing branches. Now, Jesus says very explicitly what each of these are. Fruit-bearing branches are His people. They are His disciples. Okay? Non-fruit-bearing branches have nothing to do with Jesus. They are not His disciples. They are not His followers. They are not in Him. They are not related to Him. Okay? So you got four characters. Let's go over them again. Jesus is the vine. The Father is the vine dresser. The disciples are the branches that bear fruit. Everybody else is a non-fruit-bearing branch. All right, you got the four characters? You're ready to move on? Because there's four points that relate to each one of these. All right, here's the first point. Number one. A branch only produces fruit when it is attached to the vine. Let me read that again. A branch only produces fruit when it is attached to the vine. In verses 2, 4, and 5, Jesus is very specific. He says, as the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither you unless you abide in me. So Jesus is using the metaphor. For example, if we had a grapevine up here this morning that was big enough that it had a bunch of branches, if we cut one of the branches off and laid it onto the side, logically, you know what's going to happen to it. It is going to wither and become dead and dry, and then you're going to have to throw it in the woods or throw it on the burn pile. Correct?
Yes.
Thank you, Ms. Jack. Appreciate that. So that's the metaphor. The reality is that if you and I, as people, are not connected to Jesus, we will not produce kingdom fruit. We can't. Because Jesus is the locus and the center of God's work in the world. So if we want to produce fruit equivalent to the kingdom, we have to be connected to the vine. The word Jesus uses to describe that relationship is the word abide. Now, he's used abide in John a good bit, but in this passage, he uses it seven times. And the word literally means, listen to me, literally means to stay in one place for a long period of time. Do you hear that? Stay in one place for a long period of time. Now let's read verse 4, but we're going to change the word abide with stay in one place for a long period of time. Okay, you ready? We're going to start in the second sentence, as the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it remains in the vine for a long period of time. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me for a long period of time. You catch the idea? Jesus is very explicit. You and I will not bear fruit of the kingdom. Remember a couple weeks ago? Jesus says that he expects us to do work, and greater works than these will you do? You and I will never do the greater works of Christ unless we remain in Him for a long period of time. Right? So a branch cannot produce fruit unless it is connected to the vine of Jesus. Here's the second thing that we see in this passage. It comes out of verse number 2. Pruning must take place. What does it say? Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away. We'll talk about that part in a minute. And every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes. This week I was watching, it's like spring. It's like, I don't know how y'all feel about this, but I like for it to be cold Christmas and New Year's. And then after that, I have no use for the cold weather. The only use for cold weather that I can tolerate just in my mind is that I know the really good peaches that come out in July need like so many chill hours, and so I can tolerate it so we can get the good peaches. Y'all know they send all the June peaches up north, and then they think they're not written. Anyway, you need to go to these in July. That's the best ones, right? They send all the other ones up north, and they're like, oh. We ate some, this is totally awesome. We ate some peaches that were from California when we lived in Mississippi. They were terrible. And those people in Mississippi, bless their hearts, thought that's what a real peach tasted like. I felt so bad for them, right? So bad for them. So that's the only reason I tolerate a little bit of cold weather after Christmas, is because I know the really good peaches need them. But anyway, that's totally awesome. But what I do know, I was watching a video the other day, because it's about to be spring, and so I'm watching all the gardening videos. I've got seeds started in trays right now for tomatoes. Pray for me that they make. All right. But I watched this video from these guys in Tipton, and he was out there doing it. And you know what he was doing? He was trimming his muscadine vines. You want to know why? Because you have to in order for them to continue to produce year after year. You can't just let them run wild, because it actually decreases the production. They're actually more productive if you regularly trim them. And he said every year he trims the vines. And every 3 years he completely like cuts back all the branches. Because in 3 years they're so overgrown that there's so much branch that they don't produce as much fruit. So this was the third year. And so he showed this picture, and it was this jungle of growth. And what he showed when he panned the camera this way, it was a clean vine. And his statement was, this summer, this thing will be loaded with muscadines. Because you have to trim it back. In the same way, if we are connected with Christ, the anticipation is that we will bear fruit. But the other side of that is, God just doesn't want us to bear a little bit. He wants us to bear a lot, which we'll talk about more in a second. But in order to do that, he has to cut some things away. Listen to me. He has to cut some things away out of our lives. The question is, well, what's God going to cut away? He's going to cut away everything that don't look like Christ in our lives and in yours. Right? And so the Father prunes us back for the purpose of us being more productive. Number three, here's the third thing. Much fruit, listen to me, much fruit is the expectation. Here in verse number two, what does it say? He prunes, last little comma, he prunes that it may bear more fruit. But then in verse 8, if we read verse 8, Jesus says the goal is that you bear what? Much fruit. Not just some fruit, not a piddly amount, not just a token showing of fruit, not just so we know that you're a part of it. No. Your goal and our goal, our aiming point should be to bear much kingdom fruit in our lives. This year, I mentioned a second ago, I started tomatoes in trays. I specifically got a couple varieties from these guys in Tifton, right? He did this whole video last year on which tomatoes they planted that were the most productive. I mean, Tipton's not that far with our heat and our humidity. And they all, their company offers these three. So what three do you think I got? The three that he said are the most productive given our humidity and temperature and climate. Why? Because all of us only have a certain amount of space in a garden. So do you want the tomato that makes three or four or makes gallons? Well, if I got a choice, I'll take the gallons as long as they taste good. Right? And so that's the goal. You and I only have a short amount of time to live on this earth. We don't have an infinite number of years. And the goal is for us to produce as much kingdom fruit as we can for whatever number of years we have. Not a token showing, not I'll get to it one day, but our goal is to produce as much fruit as we can. Here's the fourth thing. Listen to me. This is the hard one. This is the hard one. We see the relationship of non-bearing branches to the vine. Because here's the reality. Not everyone in the world bears fruit of Christ or fruit of the kingdom. So what relationship do they have with the vine? Jesus is very specific. Look at verse number 6. Let's read it again. If anyone does not abide in me, does not remain in me for a long period of time, he is thrown away like a branch and withers. And the branches are gathered, thrown into the fire, and burned. What does that mean? That means, what does Jesus say? He talks about it in verse 2 as well. In other words, people who do not bear kingdom fruit are not a part of Jesus. And therefore, they cannot bear kingdom fruit and will not until they accept Christ's forgiveness and sacrifice on the cross for their lives. So what happens to those people? Well, Jesus is like, I don't want to extend the metaphor beyond what it does. But what do you think thrown in the fire means? It means what you think it means. Why? Because those people are not connected to Christ. And therefore, they are not going to bear kingdom fruit and will not bear kingdom fruit. And therefore, since they're not connected to the vine, their end is not a happy one. And Jesus is very explicit about this on the last night he's with his disciples, speaking to his disciples. They don't have a relationship with Christ. And the only people that prove that they do are those that continue to bear kingdom fruit. Okay, now that's the illustration. That's the metaphor. In verses 9 through 17, Jesus is going to explain in a little more detail what that metaphor means. In verse number 9, he shows us that the Father's love is the basis of the reciprocal love that he shows the disciples and by extension us. As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Remain in me for a long period of time in my love. Right? So then we learn in this last little part, abide in my love, we learn what it means to abide in Jesus. To abide and to remain in Him a long period of time means to remain in His love for a long period of time. To remain in a loving relationship with Christ. Well, how do we do that? That should be the natural question. Well, Jesus answers that in the next verse. He says, if you keep my commandments, you abide in my love. So how do we remain for a long period of time in Jesus' love? How do we do that? Keep His commandments. So the question you should be asking yourselves right now, and the question I should be asking myself, is, am I obedient to Jesus? And if the answer is no, you need to be worried. You need to take stock of your life, because if you're not obedient to Christ, then you're not going to be connected to Christ for long, and you're not going to be producing kingdom fruit. And if you're not producing kingdom fruit, what does that show us? You don't have a relationship with the vine, really. And it's cut away, thrown into the fire. Right? That's what Jesus says. So, however, we can stay connected to Christ, and we can remain in Him by remaining in His love. And the way that we show that is by being obedient to His commands. And one of the greatest ways we can be obedient to the commands of Jesus is if we love one another as He has loved us, which is exactly what Jesus says here in this passage as well. Right? So, let's follow the logic here for just a minute. Jesus is the vine. Okay, look at me. Jesus is the vine. We must be connected to Him in order to bear much fruit. We must abide in Him. We must be connected to the vine to bear much fruit. How do we stay connected to the vine? Well, we abide, we remain in Christ's love for a long period of time. And how do we remain in Christ's love for a long period of time? By keeping His commandments. And when we keep His commandments, we will inevitably produce much fruit of the kingdom in our lives. And when we start producing fruit, the Father says, hey, guess what? I got a better way for it to help you produce more fruit. We just need to trim off this excess right here. And the Father prunes you and me so we collectively bear more fruit. And one of the main ways that we show that bearing fruit is by loving others as Christ has loved us. And why should we do any of this? Jesus tells us. He gives us several reasons. One, it proves that we are Jesus' disciples. It brings glory to God, and as the passage on the screen says, it is through this process that Jesus brings us His joy, thereby making our joy complete. So what could we say? If you don't have joy in your life, one conclusion, if you don't have true joy despite the circumstances, it could be because you're not connected to Christ the way you really think you are. So we got four points that logically flow together that take us from Jesus the vine to us producing much kingdom fruit. And it's right here in this passage. Now, what do we walk home with today? So I'm going to give you a couple of ideas before we close this part down and do a response time and go into communion. I'm going to give you a couple of ideas. I got two on your outline, but I'm going to give you two bonus ones, okay, to begin with. So these aren't on your outline. If you're a note taker, you want to write these down. Listen, okay? Here's the first thing we learned. Listen to me real carefully. I want you to get this. The vine, Jesus, gives you everything you need to produce fruit. Think about the image. The vine, if you plant a crop, whatever it is, tomatoes, peppers, corn, if you have fruit trees, pecan trees, if you have grapevines, that part, that trunk piece that is connected to the ground, that then, to use the vine image, that trunk piece that's connected to the ground, that then sprawls out, it's not where the fruit comes. The fruit comes on the branches, right, in this grape image. But what does the trunk, what does the vine part do? It pushes everything it has into the branches so that the branches produce the fruit. What does that tell us? Jesus pushes everything you need to produce fruit. In other words, you and I don't have an excuse on one hand. And number two, we don't need to seek it from anywhere else. You don't need to go run to anyone else to help you to produce more fruit. Now we can encourage one another. We can lift each other up. We can call each other to account and have accountability. Absolutely. But you don't need me to grow and produce fruit. And look at me, I'm going to be real blunt, and I'm going to cut myself out of a job here today. But listen to me. If I am your source of producing fruit, we ain't doing it right. Because you don't need me. You need Christ alone, right? Well, it's the song we sing, Christ alone, right? That's your source. Not me, not even, not your husband, not your spouse, not definitely not your kids, right? Nope, not your mom, dad, nobody. You need Christ and Christ alone, because only Christ can give you what you need to produce kingdom fruit. Now, I help you every way I can, but you don't need me. And if you're looking to me to be, or anybody else, you're looking in the wrong spot, because it's the vine you're connected to. I'm your vine, just like I'm a branch just like you are. Right? Here's the second thing. The Father expertly knows how to prune. Right? Expertly knows how to prune. Several years ago, I watched a video on how to cut crepe myrtles. Because, you know, if you cut them wrong, it's called crepe murder. The genre is pretty, a little arborist joke. Crepe murder. Right? I didn't know. I don't really like crepe myrtles. And so I've cut a bunch of ours down. But that can be really pretty. But, you know, you got to know how to cut them the right way to make them look good when they bloom. If you don't, you, murder them and they look really ugly and all that. And in the same way, you got to know what you're doing in order to make them look pretty. In the same way, God exactly knows what to do to help you produce as much fruit as you possibly can. Because what God needs to do in your life may be different than what He needs to do in my life. Versus what He needs to do in y'all's lives over here. And He knows the difference of what He needs to get the most fruit out of you. So when you have that longing or that kind of what we would call conviction in your heart, if you're honest, just like if I were honest, a lot of times we kind of, no, I don't need that. She needs it. I don't need that. He needs it over there. But in reality, it's God through the Spirit showing us where we need to be pruned back a little bit. Now, here's the last two things, really clearly, that I think are in this passage. These are the ones that are on your outline. We are at our best when we are producing much fruit. We are at our best when we are producing much fruit. Right? You are not at your best when you just bear. You're not your best. Jesus doesn't say in this passage, hey, just hang on to the vine and you'll be all right. You know, I'm just sitting and soaking. I'm just here warming the pew. No, that's not what He says. He says you're intended to bear much fruit. So when you're not bearing much fruit, you're not at your best. I'll put it to you this way, in a non-agricultural sense, but in a fishing context. I heard Bill Barker say this in a pastor's meeting. You ready? When fishermen don't fish, they fight. Think about it. He told this story about him and a bunch of buddies went to go fishing, and it flooded, and they never got to go. And they made it through one day. By day two, they was at each other's throat. You want to know why? They wasn't there to sit around and hang out. They was there to fish. But they couldn't fish. You know what they did? Fight. In the same way, when you and I aren't producing much fruit, we worry about what everybody else is doing and how they're not producing fruit. When in reality, we ain't either, because if you're producing fruit, you ain't got time to worry about nobody else. Right? And what they're doing or they're not doing. And lastly, minimal fruit production is a symptom of a deeper problem. Last year, I planted like 10 to 15 pepper plants. We love bell peppers at our house, and so I planted 10 to 15. And they were thriving. They were doing great. They were about knee high, and they were just starting to put out buds. And they were some of the buds had already popped open. They were flowering, and I was like, "Yes, we're gonna have peppers for days. This is gonna be great. We'll have peppers all winter and all of that." And so one day I went out there, and this was when it was like 1,000 degrees. You remember that little spell when it was like dry and hot for weeks? And so one of the pepper plants wasn't doing good. And I was like, I just need to water it more. So that afternoon, after I got home, it was right before dark, I went out there, and I mean, I drowned the thing. Like, went out there the next morning to check on it, perked right back up. And I thought, there we go, that's exactly what I mean. Come home that afternoon, like wilted over. I mean, just like dying, like, what is going on? Like, it needs more water. So that day, come back the next morning, pop back up. The next afternoon, so that same cycle goes on for several days. So one afternoon, I'm thinking the same thing's going to happen. I'm going to water it a lot. As I'm watering the other one, I'm just going to put a little more on this one. And the next morning, it'll be perky. Well, I got the next morning, and it looks worse. And I was like, what is going on with this thing? So I go out there that afternoon, and it's like 1,000 degrees that day. And it looks just atrocious. And I'm like, oh, my God. The next morning, it's even worse. Like, it's like, at this point, I've resigned that this plant's going to die. Like, it's just, something's wrong with it. So, you know, I do what, like, all, you know, investigative gardeners do. I start digging around in the dirt. And unbeknownst to me, the plants, this particular plant, had pepper grubs. I'd never heard of pepper grubs. I had to look it up on the internet. I didn't know what a pepper, like, I always thought the peppers just got the thing, you know, like worms and ate in the peppers and all that. They do, they get those too. But this had pepper grubs. They're like tiny termites, but they're not termites. They're for peppers. And what happens is you don't see them because they're under the surface, but they eat the roots of the plant. And eventually, if they're bad enough, they will sever the stem from the root. And so that day I went out there, or like a day or two later, I went out there and just touched the plant, and the entire plant just went, because they had ate, like literally, they had bit across it and like sheared it off, but it was still just standing up there because I had it trellised. Last season, I lost out of 10 to 15 plants, I probably lost half of them to pepper grubs, all of which started the same way. The plant looks great at the beginning. It looks awesome. And then all of a sudden it starts to droop and droop and droop and droop. And then finally it shrivels and dies. And there's nothing you can do about it. Once they get in, they're gone. And it's successively lost. And here's my point. They looked great, and then they didn't. And when they didn't look great, it was a sign of a deeper issue. And unfortunately, this one was an incurable issue. You lost the plants. And so my point for you today is, right, if you're not producing much fruit in your life, it's a sign of a deeper problem. You may look great on the outside, but it's not how much leaf, to hone in on the vine illustration, it's not how much leaf you have, it's how much fruit that you produce. And so if you and I aren't producing much fruit, it's a sign that we've got something going on the inside of our lives that's not quite right. And so what are the pepper grubs of our lives? Well, cares of the world. As Jesus, what does Jesus say? Cast all your cares upon me. Right? When we don't cast them upon Jesus, they begin to sever our relationship with God. John says in 1 John, the pride of life, lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, when all of that the world offers begins, when we let it creep in, it's like those pepper grubs come in our life that slowly sever us away until we are not as productive as we could be. And so when we're not producing much fruit, when we are producing much fruit, we're at our best. If we have minimal fruit production, we need to do some inventory in our life to see what's causing that problem. All right, because my goal, what I want for you, and what Jesus wants for you, is for you to produce not just some fruit, not just more fruit, but much fruit. And the main way you and I do that is obviously by being connected to the vine and by keeping Jesus' commandments, right? And remaining with Him for a long period of time.
Thanks for listening. For more information about Valley Grove, visit our Facebook page or website, valleygrovechurch.org.